Joining us now is Stephen Lasseter, who will be portraying Johnny Cash and who is directing and music directing Million Dollar Quartet, which opens soon at 6th Street Playhouse. Welcome to Outbeat Collage, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's nice to join you here and nice to get the word out.
Very good, very good. The show looks amazing. Talk a bit about the show itself, how it came to be, who wrote it, how long it's been out there.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Yeah. So, it's been out now for quite a few years, over a decade. It hit the Broadway circuit. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it had a lot of workshops. It workshopped, a lot. It had, one of the original workshops, I believe, was in a theater called the Village Theater, just outside of Seattle. I think most of the Broadway original cast was in that, and then it had a Chicago sit-down for quite a bit. Then it moved to Broadway, and then it moved to Off-Broadway. But I think one of their biggest successes was actually in Chicago. It was there for quite a while. Chuck Mead is the music supervisor and the original music director of the show on Broadway. And he is still involved with the show today. He supervises it here and there. They have a production of it on the Norwegian Cruise Line that Chuck still goes and sets every single show. Every 8 months or so, he is involved with that. And Chuck Mead is a local sort of Nashville legend in the music. And I can't really recall, this might be a pause. I want to make sure I know the original writer's name as well. I don't really.
I've got Colin Escott and Floyd Muttrux.
Muttrux? There you go. Yes. Sorry. We can push play again. Yes. Colin Prescott and Floyd Muttrux, wrote the script and Colin Prescott is a gentleman, who I believe lives in Nashville now. I think that he's from England originally. He wrote the book that they made the Hank Williams film out of a few years back. I Saw the Lights, with the actor who plays Loki, whatever, Tom Hiddleston, I believe was his name.
Something like that.
So Floyd is an American music sort of historian, and he helped write the script as well. But it's a show that's been had a wonderful run in the regional circuit. As soon as, like most shows, when they hit Broadway, they hit off Broadway, and then they leave. They'll release the rights to go to regional theaters across the country, and it's a show that's just kept the memory alive of these four icons from back then. And we just lost Jerry Lee just a few years back, so he held on for a long time. it's been a great thing. It's been a part of my life now for, you know, over 6-7 years.
Wow. So how many times have you, in different productions, have you played Johnny?
Whenever this production ends, I will hit close to 700 performances.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
All together. Yeah. I started out as an understudy, actually. My first foray into the MDQ world was with the Actors Equity National Touring Production back in 2018. And I was the understudy for Johnny Cash, for Carl Perkins, and for Sam Phillips. So I had to learn a lot of the script. And then I sort of took over the role of Johnny Cash whenever it went to the non-union side and into the regional theater side as well. But it's been great. Johnny Cash has been a part of my life for a long time, starting with another older Broadway musical called Ring of Fire that is also in the regional circuit now. And it's music that speaks to a lot of America, speaks to a lot of the world, and it's just wonderful to get to tell the story, because I think one of my biggest things is, if we stop telling the story, eventually no one will remember it. No one will
Right, right.
Remember these people. So as long as we can keep their memory alive, we're doing a service to everyone. So that's one of the biggest reasons I love to do this show.
Right. So talk about your first exposure to, I mean, most people can remember their first exposure. I don't know how old you are. You're probably a lot younger than I am.
I'm 43.
43. So you're a lot younger than I am. Because, you know, when I was a teenager, my father listened to country music, which was odd being from Chicago. But, you know, he always listened to country music. He was a truck driver himself. It really spoke to him, and he loved Johnny Cash. So, I mean, I remember seeing the Johnny Cash show. I don't know how many seasons it lasted, you know, typical variety show. But, you know, what a sort of fascinating man he was. You know, rough times, good times, this incredible marriage. Talk about the research you did so that you could take on this role.
Yeah, sure thing. Absolutely. Well, I kind of grew up with my first introduction to just music in general. I have one of my uncles was a musician, kind of a rockabilly musician back in Houston way back in the day. So I think that was my first introduction into that sort of genre of rockabilly, even though his band back then was a little more of a modern rockabilly sound. And then, of course, I got into the sort of punk rock scene that was happening in the early, mid-90s. But you always would hear these songs on the radio back when the radio was really a bigger thing than maybe it is now, just in the car on a family trip. You know, my grandparents and I and my sisters would take these longer trips to visit family in Wisconsin from Texas and stuff like that. And I just kind of remembered the bigger hits, Folsom Prison, you know, Ring of Fire, Walk the Line, things like that. And honestly, whenever I got involved in live theater, I think my musician side sort of took a step back because I started playing guitar at a young age and playing in that punk rock scene. And then I started focusing more on like Broadway style musicals, you know, song and dance type stuff. And then these, what we call jukebox musicals, kind of came around. And I was really excited to be a part of a show called The Buddy Holly Story years back. And then the next year at that same theater was Ring of Fire. So I was really excited to kind of use my lower vocal range to portray one of the, because it was a cast of six men and six women, and there was sort of an older age Cash, a middle age, and a young age, and so it was just nice to revisit the feel of it all and kind of remind myself what I used to hear as a kid, and then of course luckily with our tools like YouTube and things like that, we can kind of go back and watch a lot of the older television appearances that Johnny made and kind of see how sort of stoic he was, but also how much fun he still had just with his face and with playing with his band. And over the years, yeah, just kind of trying to pay homage the best that I could to a man that had, like you said, an amazing career.
Yeah. I mean, up until the end. I mean, he was recording with U2, right? And yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did his The American Recordings albums with Rick Rubin, where he really just, that's when he recorded his famous version of Hurt he covered from the Nine Inch Nails, and he did a Soundgarden tune. He covered Rusty Cage. And so, yeah, he definitely did. And all it was just him and his guitar, and he didn't even use a pick. He just hit, one of his quotes was, "Played it all with my thumb."
Wow.
You know, and he played up until there's a video that you can find on YouTube. It was his last performance live, not too terribly long before, you know, he passed on to his great reward, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, that album was just a year before he died, or less, it seems.
Yeah, well, he had a couple of them. The American Recordings, I think he had a couple of volumes, at least two or three. Mm. And I think he it was at least nominated for Grammys, if not winning a Grammy or two.
Yeah.
I have to check Google on that one, but
right. I'm sure Johnny has a few Grammys. I would hope so. So do you really try to mimic his voice, or do you take inspiration from his, especially his singing voice? I mean, very, very distinctive, that kind of gravelly grovel.
Yeah. Well, I do. And I think that what a lot of us in the $1 million quartet sort of world try to achieve is we don't want to be like carbon copy, like comic book versions of them. Because I think that can sort of happen sometimes, and those productions are still good. They're still very effective. But I think that what most people in the MDQ world try to do is, yeah, take a little bit of yourself and a little bit of your character and try to find that perfect balance. So I do try to use a little bit of that sort of lower kind of quiver vibrato that he had. Mm. And of course he had some like iconic sort of stances. He would stand very, you know, with his kind of feet together, and he would sometimes hold the guitar up a little high. And I try to do that. But during the scenes in the show, it's a very different time for Johnny and for Elvis and for Carl Perkins and for Jerry Lee. So, you know, he's there not really wanting to be there because he has been ducking and diving Mr. Phillips for a little while, because he was going to move on to a better part of his career. So, yeah, when singing his songs, I definitely do try to capture a little bit of that classic Johnny Cash that people are used to hearing. But then what the beautiful part of this show is that once the music stops and it's just the scenes, you really get to kind of experience the conflict that was happening in that night.
So talk about that. The play takes place in 1956. For those who may not be familiar with the show, tell us the plot of the show, who the major players are, and what happens without giving too much away.
Without giving too much away.
No spoilers.
Yes, so it's on December 4th, 1956. And it is, I can go ahead and preface, because most people have done their research or have seen the show before. It's a very loose telling of that night, as of course, it's a play, it's a musical, so there are some liberties and some things changed here and there. But what's happening in the show is, Sam Phillips, at this time, Jerry Lee Lewis was just a studio musician. Mm-hmm. He had maybe had one record out, and he hadn't really had a huge, giant money-making success yet. So you've got Fluke, who is the drummer, W.S. Fluke Holland is there, and Jay Perkins, who is Carl Perkins's brother, his older brother, is the bass player character there, and they're also the studio musicians too. And then it just kind of starts with Carl Perkins is supposed to have a session that night. He's a little bit late, you know, so Carl shows up and Jerry Lee is playing a song because he was late to his own session. And so, you know, Carl's kind of got a little bit of a burned feeling from Jerry Lee Lewis. He's the new kid, you know, and Carl had his big success with Blue Suede Shoes. Hadn't really had another really, really big one just yet. And so he's kind of feeling a little left out, because Mr. Phillips has this new kid on the piano, this new big flashy kid. And so then Johnny Cash shows up because he was, I think, just kind of stopping by for a quick minute because Sam Phillips wanted to talk to him and Johnny wanted to talk to him. And here's I don't want to dive too much into it to give away some of the plot. But so Johnny shows up and there's a little bit of awkward feelings here and there all around, but they're still all friends. And then Elvis shows up, and Elvis has just had a big hit off of Love Me Tender, not only the song, but the movie. So everyone is kind of a little, has a little bit of ill feelings toward Elvis, because it's like, oh, here's the, you know, the hillbilly went Hollywood, here he comes. Yeah, but they're all still friends. So they're all kind of razzing each other, but there is still some conflict there. And, you know, Mr. Phillips is kind of going through some of his own feelings about maybe moving on. The whole show, I think, in a lot of ways, is about every single person is thinking about moving on with their careers, moving on from their roots. It's Sun, from their roots in Memphis and whatnot. Elvis already moved up to RCA in New York City, and that's who he's repped by now. Also, Elvis has his very beautiful girlfriend, played by my very beautiful wife, Jennifer Barnuba. her real name in real life is Marilyn Evans. But they wrote her character in to kind of give a bit of a just a nice a female perspective as well. Instead of just having a whole group of these guys in, we have Diane, who comes in, kind of acts like a vehicle for Sam Phillips to talk to someone else that's an outsider, you know, because he's got all of his boys here and he's trying to deal with all of this. And so Diane kind of helps give him a little perspective throughout the show, and also sings a couple of knockout songs. In the end, there's a lot of conflict and then there's a lot of resolution. And then we play a nice big concert at the end and we'll, you know, blow the house down.
I bet. So talk about what it means to be a musical director for a musical like this.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, sir. I have music directed only these jukebox musicals, if you will. Never a true just a Broadway style, but I've music directed the Buddy Holly story a time or two. And this is my third time music directing Million Dollar Quartet. I also have music directed Ring of Fire last year at San Luis Obispo Repertory Theater. And it's just nice to be in a room of musicians and kind of get to put your stamp on these songs, because we are not only just playing the tunes, but we're trying to tell them in a sort of theatrical way to add a little bit of flavor into it and to make it exciting for the audience. So in this particular production, it's wonderful because I'm working with people that I've worked with many times before in the past. Our Jeremy Lewis, Jennifer, my wife, and I just worked with him in Colorado recently. And our Carl Perkins, Jake Turner, who is a sort of a local legend, if you will, in the Santa Rosa, Sonoma County music scene. And he was in this original production with us in 2019. And our bass player, Michael Price, we've worked with before. George Smeltz is our drummer. Our Elvis is a man named Nathan Roberts. We've worked with him before. So it's just nice to kind of be in a room with people that are all working towards the same goal. There's no one more important person than the other, and everyone is speaking the same language. So it's just really nice to be able to not only do it right, but then add a little bit more to it and just take it up to that next level.
It sounds amazing. The show sounds amazing. I haven't seen it. I will be seeing it. It looks really exciting, and it's so much more interesting to sort of pick a pivotal moment for a jukebox musical. I mean, that's a little derogatory. I think it can come off derogatory. I don't think it is. I think they're amazing. But here you're picking a pivotal moment in the careers of four people rather than doing kind of a biopic and going through all the hits and, you know, was Johnny Cash a big, big star? I mean, I know Elvis was because of Hollywood. Was Johnny Cash a big star at the time?
Yes, Johnny had just busted wide open in the whole scene. He had records topping like the pop charts.
Yeah,
because there was pop, blues, and country, and Johnny had his really big. Of course, Folsom Prison was a big hit, and Walk the Line was his gold record, I believe. He had already been making a lot of headway and was just kind of getting the taste of what it means to earn money just from it being sent to you in the mailbox because your records are selling so much. And Carl was feeling that too, but Carl also, everyone else, you know, Elvis and Johnny were having more hits and more hits and more hits. And Carl was kind of a little stalled and not really. Once again, there are some liberties taken to maybe make the story seem a little more theatrical because Carl did have some other hits. Matchbox was a huge hit for him. It is nice though, like you said, to pick this time in everyone's life, and the audience will get to learn a lot. It's kind of a nice history lesson, and I think the way that we treat this show is that it's just like the audience is in Sun Studio with everyone else, just kind of sitting in chairs watching, you know, because our Sam Phillips, Dwayne Stancelli, who's also a local legend in the theater scene. He kind of breaks the fourth wall a lot and talks directly to the audience. Mm. So he really pulls them in and they get to feel like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Or I had no idea. Or
how the sausage is made.
Exactly. That's right.
The long, long hours of recording.
He has a monologue where he says, you know, there's sometimes we're in there working on a song, you know, hour upon hour, and everyone goes home and it's, you know, 3 a.m. and he's in there by himself and he kind of gets to reflect on what he's done, you know.
Yep. Still tinkering away. So you're also the show's director. So talk about, you know, directing other folks and directing who are your co-stars and sort of directing yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. This will be my first time directing this show. And I've done some sort of direction in the past here at Sixth Street with the Jukebox All-Star fundraisers that they do. Normally at the end of every run, we do a big thing. And I kind of sort of help facilitate that a little bit. I don't want to take credit for it. Other shows in the past, I've sort of helped when needed. But no, I'm excited to sort of set the stage because I over the years you when doing a show like this a lot that I've done, you kind of piece together from all of the greats that you've worked with. You know, there are things that work over the years, certain, you know, bits that work, certain blocking moments that work. But also after having been in it so many times over the years, I also have sort of formed my own ideas of how I would like a certain scene to go. And I'm very excited to really just work with my friends, you know, and my wife. It's such a treat. It's such a gift that Sixth Street has given me to be able to do this and to trust me with doing it. But yeah, like I said, I mean, I know pretty much everyone in this cast very well, except for Dwayne, who I've gotten to know over the last few days. He's a wonderful guy, wonderful actor. And I'm just excited for the collaborative effort, and just in general. It's going to be a wonderful time. It's a very, it's just one set. You know, there are no big set changes, no big costume changes. It's really wonderful to have it all in this 1-2 hours in Sun Records, and just sort of kind of hanging out with my friends and maybe giving them a little bit of direction here and there and just kind of push play and let them go and see what sticks.
Nice. The show runs March 29th through May 4th. Usually it's Thursday through Sunday.
That's right. Yep. And look for some possible, you never know, possible added matinees here and there, stuff like that, which will, Sixth Street's got a great team a great PR team, great marketing team, great management. They will make sure that the public knows when they can come see the show.
Excellent. So do you still write and perform music on your own?
You know, I've never been much of a writer, and I've always been jealous of people sort of that have that ability. I still perform, yes, sir, all the time, as much as we can. That's why I really enjoy doing these kinds of shows, but especially here at Sixth Street, we do. And I'm not trying to plug it too much, but we do that jukebox thing at the fundraiser at the end of every run. And it's a really nice chance to get to play different songs in the same genre. Mm. But my wife Jennifer and I, we have our own Johnny and June tribute show that we do here and there. Cash Carter and Company is the name of it. And so we try to, like I said, just keep the story going, keep the memory alive. We are leaving as soon as this show is over. We actually drive, because we drove out here. We're cross country driving people, and we are driving to Alaska.
Wow.
As soon as we're done here. Yeah. Which is where we met, actually, to have a residency performing gig. Where at Holland America Princess owns a little resort in the middle of Denali area. Mm. And we're going to go out there and play any number of classic country, classic, 50s, 60s, rock and roll, R&B type of songs. On the writing side, I wish I was better at it. And maybe I'll get there one day. But yes, any chance we get to perform, whether it be in a musical, Broadway style, or in a jukebox musical, if you will, or just having a gig, any kind of bar gig, or our Johnny and June show, we try to keep going. Because if you stop one day, then all of a sudden you stop.
Right. The alternative to keep going is stopping, and yeah.
Right.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much. What a pleasure it was chatting with you. Best of luck with the show, or break a leg.
Thank you very much.
Please come back next time you're around, and we'll chat again. Again, Million Dollar Quartet starts its run March 29th, runs through May 4th. Go to Sixth Street Playhouse's website and get tickets on sale now. And it sounds like it'll be a terrific show.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Gary, thank you so much. And thanks to everyone out there listening. And come on down to the show, and then let's rock and roll.
Great. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Good night.